Let me tell you a little bit about BetOnline. It remains your number one spot for NBA, MLB, MMA, boxing. It doesn't matter. Every single prop, every single play, every single point, it's all at BetOnline. When it comes to bets, when it comes to props, everything that you need is at your headquarters for sports betting. That's BetOnline. Head to the website right now. Use your mobile device. Sign up. Get a 50, that's 50% welcome bonus. Don't forget to use the promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, to get yourself a 50% welcome bonus. Come on, there's no need to hesitate. Bet online, where the game starts. All right, let's get down to business. An active lifestyle can cause hemorrhoids. That sucks. Lucky for you, they're south of the border. South of the border is a holistic approach to dealing with the affected area. Go to southoftheborder.com, use code AHOLE, A-H-O-L-E, get yourself 30% off. That's pretty rad. And this is not an area of your body you want to put bad ingredients in. Make sure you turn to South of the Border. Southoftheborder.com, code AHOLE.
I hope you're ready to have your mind blown with the greatest health and fitness information on the planet.
Yes, bitch!
Yeah, buddy! Woo! Woo! Shot out of a cannon this morning. I feel like Ric Flair coming in. Woo! Gotta beat the man to be the man. That's not true, by the way, in real fighting. I know they say that, but especially nowadays where people will be champion and they're like, peace. Like, Tom Aspinall's the man. He hasn't beaten the man.
That's why he has an interim title.
But you know, I'm saying, like, that the notion of you have to beat the man to be, like.
Is Tom Aspinall the man?
I've never really sensed. Ever in his entire career, I've never sensed that John Jones was scared to fight anybody until this guy.
He's not.
You don't think?
No.
What?
Did you watch their face-off?
I did.
Did John look scared?
I don't think John's scared to fight him at an event in the street. I think John's scared to get in the ring with him, to get in the octagon.
Why do you say that?
Because I think Tom Aspinall could beat up John Jones. I think he could.
Right, and do you think John believes that?
Maybe. Yeah, secretly. Because I think if John didn't believe that, he would have fought him.
Why do you say that?
Well, because obviously there's the injury that's been preventing John from. But he still, like, I saw that face off. And don't get me wrong. John Jones is the Tom Brady of MMA. In that, I don't care if John Jones is 70. I don't care if he hasn't fought in 15 years. I'm not betting against John Jones.
John Jones is the Kelly Slater of MMA.
Yes.
That's a more accurate. He's the youngest and the oldest to ever be champion.
It's amazing.
And statistically, or not statistically, but debatably has not ever lost it.
I don't care what the stakes are. Like, the reason I was saying Tom Brady is, like, when he did the comeback with the Buccaneers, all these people are like, there's no way. And I said, no, if he's manning quarterback for a team, I'm not betting against them. There's no circumstances where that's a good idea. And John Jones, I don't care if he's fighting Prime Ngannou. I don't care. It doesn't matter. There's no circumstance where I'm like, it's a good idea. I'm going to bet against John Jones. He's that good. But even after that face-off, he's still like, I'm going to close up my career by fighting Stipe. I'm going to fight Stipe. And then, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's this young guy right here who's like,
until
he's the man.
I mean, he can still fight him.
Crazier shit's happened. I mean, if Mike Tyson's going to fight Jake Paul, John Jones could fight anybody, right?
And Tom Aspinall is the flavor of the month. You know, before that, he was scared to fight Ngannou. And before that, he was scared to, like, he's.
Right, but.
I'm going to say he's scared of who's ever up in line and who's ever up next. And
but all those other fighters, because you're someone who understands combat sports. You understand what it's like, and you understand the intricacies of it. All those other times I thought, like, that's MMA media talking shit, trying to get John. This is one time where I'm like, oh, no, this guy could beat John Jones.
Tom Aspinall has amazing skills, but he also, who has he beat? Sergey Pavlovich?
Yeah. Pavlovich is no joke. But he's not John Jones, but listen, at heavyweight, who's John beat? Cyril Gane? And that was the weakest fucking...
The Cyril Gane who went five rounds with Francis Ngannou, who was the scariest heavyweight ever, who debatably beat Francis Ngannou, who heel hooked Francis and almost
ended the fight. Yeah.
So but wait, we're talking about a guy who arguably or equivocally is similarly to levels of the boogeyman. And John ended him in the first round without breaking a sweat.
This is why I'm saying Cyril Gane, really high level kickboxer. He's very high level athletic.
To someone like a Lyoto Machida, maybe.
He's so crafty.
Who also guillotined against the fence and put unconscious.
It looked like when you take the strings out of a marionette. That was one of the gnarliest submissions I'd ever seen.
So we're talking about two of the debatable like best kickboxers or punching kick striking combination fighters in the divisions.
I would not put either of those two in the best category. I would say that they're two of the slickest. They're two of the most hard to read
at that time in the weight classes. I mean, we name better
in the weight classes. I can't name. Well, I would say Alistair Overeem's a better kickboxer than Cyril Gane. If we're just going to go right now in like a glory rules.
So we got one.
Alistair's pretty. So he won the K-1 open weight championship.
Bit older as well.
Yeah, you know? No, he's old. He's 1,000 years old. And horse meat and all that, you know. But at light heavyweight.
In that time period.
Okay, you're right.
Shogun, Reese, maybe?
Because look at what Lyoto did to Brendan Vera, who's a legit Muay Thai fighter. And Lyoto fucking kung fu fucked his face off.
Before Wonderboy, I was there. He was the gold standard for karate in mixed martial arts was Lyoto Machida.
Karate's weird. Karate and taekwondo are weird in that if someone tells me they're a black belt in it, I don't feel fear at all. But if they know how to apply that, they could wreck your ass. There's just too... Honestly, it's not even the martial art itself. It's what America has done to that martial art. Like, it's gotten watered down so much. There's so many McDojos of those two arts that you don't even take it seriously anymore, you know?
Chuck Liddell, another karate.
Yeah, though, no, like, Kempo style. And he was... That Hawaiian Kempo style was brutal. Those dudes used to beat the shit out of each other in Sparta. Like, they literally used to beat the fuck out of each other in the 80s and 90s. That old American, like any of those things that went into American kickboxing, what they called it in like the 80s, that shit was so gnarly. That was fight. They literally would fight each other. Just like you would roll in jiu-jitsu, go full bore, and people be trying to play death. They would do that with striking. That's how hard those guys, like Rick Rufus and those dudes. Oh my God. That was a whole different. And people also, they think it's weird and goofy. I think because of that PKA. I think that's what it was called. But it was like that point karate that you see on ESPN when we were little boys. With the dudes with like the flared pants and stuff. And you're like, oh, that's silly. But a lot of those guys who fought in that were really bad. Like Billy Blanks, the Taibo guy, Billy Blanks would kick your face off. Goodbye. Like Nick Cage, face off.
There was just no money in it. There was only money in making instructional workout videos. Yeah.
It was a weird time. It's just like boxing is the same way. A lot of times there's really, really high level boxing trainers. They don't make a dollar, but they start doing like cardio kickboxing and shit, and that's how you get paid. But I'm feeling that Ric Flair level today, and I'm oddly under caffeinated. I don't know, maybe I just came out of the shoot. I'm upset about a couple things, and I'm also excited about a couple things. So maybe that's why I got the dichotomy of man. I'm pumped on some things, and then I'm also so angry. I really don't like the reaction video world, because there's a lot of reaction video world that's positive. Like it's happy and fun, where people will be like, oh my gosh, did you see this comedian's joke the other day? And then they click, like they make compilations of like funny things that have happened. And it's just, it's essentially reaction video. But this new world of, like, I'm going to make a career out of shitting on other people, it bothers me very much. It bothers me very much because if that's all you do, then I wonder, like, how healthy can you be? If your career, literally, like, Schaub, people make, like, 20 grand a month just talking about Brendan Schaub.
It's a ridiculous industry.
It's an industry.
Yeah.
To the point that I almost go, like,
there's hating on Brendan Schaub merch.
Yes. And then there's that one guy, Mike in Chicago, Red.
We don't say his name. We don't need to give that man any.
I'm not going to be the normal guy because, like, I'm friends with Schaub. I'm friends with D'Elia.
Yeah, Red Bar.
Red Bar. Uh-huh. And the weird thing about him is that he's very funny. He is talented. He's good on the air. Like, he could have been. And so I wonder what. I don't know. I from what I understand, I don't want to be that guy because I know, like, Santino and Sam Tripoli in particular, like, they're like ready to go beat the shit out of that guy. Understandably, because I think he's been talking shit about their kids and stuff. Like, I get it. Joey Diaz apparently is gonna go Tony Soprano on the guy. Don't be surprised if there's some guys waiting with golf clubs to bash your fucking head in. You know, I get it. I get that. But he's interesting to me because a lot of these internet shit talkers, that's what you have to offer. That's literally what you have to offer. Like, you might be a cute dude or cute chick and, like, you're going to talk shit. But that guy, I will occasionally watch some of his critiques of stuff. And I'm like, oh, he's clearly very clever and smart. He does
investigative reporting on comedians' lives.
Yeah.
And I mean, at what point it's the internet's version of a tabloid, is it not? Like, it's just live tabloids.
And people can say, well, that's what Stern and Opie and Anthony did. And I say, oh, for sure, they would look at celebrities and pick on them. But that was peppered in between a lot of other stuff that took a lot of, like, creative talent, you know? So I think when you devote yourself to just critiquing other people, it's very strange, and I don't necessarily like that. But I also think that there's a segment of that critique world, that, like, reaction video world, where it's people being very positive. For instance, Joey Swole. I like Joey Swole very much. Never met the man, but he's jacked. He's very jacked. And he takes aim at what is really bothersome to me about the fitness industry, because this is why it is so personal to me. Fitness, this sounds so corny, but fitness saved my life. It helped save my life. And I know a lot of people will say, oh, this sport or music, it saved me because I was down and out and I found something that really I was very passionate about and it made me feel better about myself. Well, listen, finding a way to make myself better, and then also it was very challenging, and I liked it. I liked the feeling of the challenge, and then also I could see if I ate a certain way and I trained a certain way, like, I actually would be, my muscles would grow in front of myself, and it's obviously a very insignificant endeavor. I'm not saving lives, but it was something very clearly positive that I was doing. And I had spent so many years being very clearly negative and self-destructive. And so to commit myself to doing something that was very positive and you could literally see growth, physical growth. And then also in turn, subsequently, I would get emotional and psychological growth, right? So it was very important to me. And also I would see people who didn't believe in themselves, because I was always a pretty insecure guy, but I don't think exceptionally so. I was insecure like every young man is, where they don't think chicks dig them and they don't know what they're going to do with their life. So I had that I had a very pedestrian, very ordinary level of insecurity. But then I would see, you know, really, really overweight guys, right? In their early 20s or something like that. Who have probably been greatly ridiculed. People with disfigured people, handicapped people, disabled people. And they would go and they would max out, they'd hit a PR or they'd do something. And there was not only was that amazing sense of achievement that would really change the way they felt about themselves, but there was a community of people around them who were being very supportive, which was probably not something they were accustomed to, right? And I watched that play out in front of my face dozens of times. For a while I tried to, and there was liability. I pushed very hard to do it, but there's a lot of liability, corporate liability, that prevented me from actually following through to do it in a formal way. But I tried very hard to have a Special Olympics powerlifting team because my dad had been involved in the Special Olympics for a long time, very highly involved in it. I think we've talked about the galas I used to go to every year for the Special Olympics, Southern California Special Olympics, with my dad. And every year until the controversies, Arnold would be there because the Shrivers, Maria Shriver, his ex-wife, founded the Special Olympics. Okay, so Arnold's there. Yeah. I couldn't leave an opportunity to talk to Arnold on the table. You know, I'd have to take advantage of that. But my dad was involved. So then subsequently I got involved with it. I would go to the events and I loved being around the athletes. And some of them were local. So I started to try to get them to go to the gym with me. And then Gold's Gym, I really pushed to have like a formal powerlifting team of Special Olympics athletes, right? And this isn't shit talking because it was the people were very supportive of it. It went up the chain and they were like, there's a liability here with a corporate Gold's Gym that they just couldn't allow this to be a thing, right? But either way, when I would see these athletes, right, the sense of achievement and the way that it would revitalize them as people, it was beautiful. So I get very upset when I see the fitness industry, by and large, more so than maybe any other industry online, has become so cynical and so rife with shit talkers and people just ready to make fun of everybody else. Because I go, wait a second. This is exactly the reason why I loved being a part of this, because this was the world that didn't do that. In a world of cynical people, in a world of negativity, in a world of people making fun of people because of their appearance, in a world of people who are overweight feeling ostracized, I was like, no, I've found actually the more in shape the people are, typically the more inviting they are and the more willing they are to be supportive. And I was like, this is why I like this. This is it. It's not just the steroids and the muscles and the abs and it's nice. But this was what really made me keep coming back. So I see this industry turning into something completely different, and it angers me very greatly. But if you're going to make fun of overweight people, you're going to make fun of people with shitty form, I go, you're a piece of shit, but I'm going to go about my day. But speaking of Joey Swole, this is where I found this clip. And it got me so goddamn angry that I had to bring it in to this show and now take part in talking shit. Because if you're going to pick on, like I said, you're going to pick on high school boys who overestimate how strong they are and the bar slams them down to the ground, or chicks who get their ponytail caught in the barbell and, you know, they're not physically harmed. Okay, I get it. It's not my jam, but I get it. The guy who wears teeny short shorts and he's doing squats, you could see a little outline of balzinis. Okay, I go about my day. You do your thing, I'll go about my day. When you start bringing in not only disabled people, but developmentally disabled people so that you can flame them and then get more likes, we've gone too far. The internet has taken us too far. What the fuck is happening? So this is from this guy, I want to make sure I get this correct. I don't want to leave any stone unturned when it comes to this stupid fuck. I am mighty fit. Now, Joey Swole took a very diplomatic approach where he said, "You got to do better." It's this kid it turns out you're clearly making fun of him because of his physical disabilities. All right? But it turns out people showed this kid that he was very hurt by this. And not only is he physically disabled, he's special needs. And all the people around him, all the other kids, were filming him because they were so proud of him and he was so happy that he was able to engage in weightlifting with all the other bros. And now you are going to make this video. I'll check it out here.
Give me one. Come on. It's a max for you. One. Two. Okay.
And Chewy and some hot nigga. Like I told Tish, I see when I shot.
What the fuck is wrong with you? Even if you didn't know any of this, which I'm assuming you didn't, I am mighty fit. You just thought it was a guy with really bad form. What the fuck could you have assumed was going on there?
Yeah, there's two people spotting each side of the bar. So I don't even think, like, he's just trying to, like, learn motion. And,
right.
Like, be included.
His spine is so evidently curved. It's not a, like, that's not a bad squat. That's someone who's clearly has serious physical dysfunction. Okay? And it's like, if you, when Heather Mills McCartney was on Dancing with the Stars, right? She has one leg. If she was dancing out on there, on the dance floor, and her fucking prosthetic fell off, and she fell to the ground, are you going to go make a video of you replicating that too? Because that's what you did is way worse, actually, because not only is this man physically disabled, I guess this is a special needs kid. And that's how you get your rocks off? What the fuck? And by the way, I Am Mighty Fit, you're not that jacked. You're not that, your legs look like Wesley Snipes' dick. Dark as shit and skinny. Not that I know what Wesley Snipes' dick looks like. But I did find it odd, shithead, that you got into those little curvatures so easily. And I know why. It's because you're on the down low. And you like to stay late at Diddy parties. And have your homies drop 15 inches of bottom out your ass. That's why you got such a limber lumbar. From all that fucking tension from dudes laying pipe. You fuck. Almost 3 million likes you got on that. Does it make you feel good? Make you pat yourself on the back? Some kid trying to engage in physical activity with tremendous disabilities, and also he's special needs, and then you're going to find that clip and go like, here's my chance, one more before I go to bed, fam. Fuck you. You weakling shitbag. Fuck you and fuck everyone else in that whole world of like, let's just sit around recreationally and find people for us to make fun of in the gym. Make fun of me. Make fun of me. Make fun of you. Like, this guy is he's out there talking about fitness. Where'd your calves go, bro? That's fun. That's fine.
All right. So after analyzing this video.
Yes.
I'm wondering why he had those 25s on that bar.
Yes.
Because if that's his walking lunge weight, that's real embarrassing, even for like a warm-up rep.
Yes.
So like, why are those 25s existing on that bar at all? Why do you have 25s in your gym at home if your name is underscore fit? Like, there is one denomination that we
the
count by.
The Mighty Fit. I Am Mighty Fit.
Yeah, sir, where is your weight?
That's what
I'm wondering. Where is your weight?
You're way too comfortable getting your hips to move like that, arching your back.
You're way uncomfortable with the term fit.
Yes. There used to be a standard.
Yeah.
I'm not Mike O'Hearn, but I'll tell you, if I had my shirt off squatting like that, my fucking tuchus wouldn't look like... And you're a black guy. You should have a great ass out of the womb. You scrawny shitbag, overcompensating piece of shit. Fuck you.
This is the problem with home gyms.
Yes.
When you had to go to the gym, you weren't allowed to act like that unless you were the biggest guy in the gym.
No. And even the biggest guy in the gym wouldn't do that.
No, it wouldn't make these vids. But you weren't allowed to do anything. But lift, shut up, and rack your weights.
Yeah, shut the fuck up. Everyone shut the fuck up. How's it? Here's it. You know how Rogan at the Comedy Mothership here, if you go to see a show there, they actually take your phone. They give you a personalized, like, baggie.
Shout out to Yonder Bags.
Yonder Bags. They give you a Yonder Bag. And then you have to check it into the front. And if you don't do that, you can't see the show. Because they didn't want people bothering the comics or sitting there scrolling through shit while you're supposed to be paying attention to the comic. I'm going to found a gym. No phone. Fuck you. If you have an emergency or something, we'll give you a little. You can have an Apple Watch or a pager that lets you know you're getting a call from, like, your kid or your spouse if there's some type of medical emergency that needs to be go. But no phones.
A PA system. Mike Catherwood, paging Mike Catherwood. Your wife is interrupting your lift.
Your wife has warts. It's official. Your wife has warts. It's from your dirty cock, Mike Catherwood. Here's another. Okay. I don't know. I don't want to take away from the credibility of this rant. But I was very upset by that. Because, like I said, it used to be that that was the place you turn so that you could escape kind of criticism, judgment, the cynicism, the weirdness. And now the internet's turned it into the number one place for you to fuck with people. And most of you chicks with your A cups hitting your fucking navel and your flat asses and all you guys out there, none of you dudes look like Jake Gyllenhaal in Roadhouse or you know, C-bum. All the people I see talking shit, you're all mid at best. You're all fucking mid. And like I said, if you want to make fun of people, make fun of me. Make fun of me. The other day I put up a video of me in my underwear running around in the farm. And I don't make it a habit to do that. But my daughter and I were going down. We made a homemade water slide she has like a plastic slide from her pirate ship, and I put water down that. And of course, my clothes immediately became destroyed. So I was in my underwear. And there's no one else there but my daughter, and I had boxer. It was like boxer briefs. It was like a bathing suit, right? But I had a picture still from it, and I put it up, and I was like, this is a call out to my agents and managers that I could have a nice industry in the underwear modeling world. Let's go. Give me a paycheck. And a lot of people were saying nice things, but it was very funny. Like, a lot of fit people were like, where did your calves go? And like, or something, you know, like, what about those bitch ass triceps? That's fine. Give it fun. Make fun of me. Make fun of my ilk. Don't make fun of fucking people who are just trying, who are probably dealing with an insane level of embarrassment just to get to the gym, an insane level of what they perceive to be judgment just to show up. And you're going to pile on them? Fuck you. Fuck you, dude. Seriously. Like, you're a black guy. I am Mighty Fit. You're a black guy, right? Imagine, if you will, especially if you're like a foundational black American, right? Your family comes from Louisiana instead of, you know, Jamaica or Nigeria, right? You're generations of being in America, right? Imagine if in like 1930, amidst Jim Crow and stuff, one of your relatives worked through incredible oppression, incredible levels of judgment and people insulting them to get to the point where they were really successful in something. And then a bunch of shitheads made a video of like of them in blackface mocking your relative. Because for someone with a curved spine like that, I don't know if it's palsy or spina bifida, whatever that poor young man was dealing with, on top of being special needs, to get to a barbell and then start squatting and get with all his buddies there filming him, cheering him on, and then you're going to make fun of that? It's kind of in the same fucking ballpark. That's Al Jolson level, to put it in terms of something you may understand.
And is there a better feeling than like actually lifting and like hitting a PR with your friends around on a weight that like you were questioning if you were really going to be able to hit? And like, that's how I feel that kid was having that moment.
Yeah.
Was having that PR moment where you got everyone around you and like you're struggling, but you get it and you go ring the cowbell or you go do whatever. Like,
yeah.
That's that moment for him. Like he got under some weight. There's people there spotting him. He, You know, I don't know. And then
look, when you're young,
take that away.
When you're young, squatting alone is scary. You don't want to do that. You're like, this feel my back's gonna break. I'm gonna go to the leg extension. Fuck this. I was healthy as a 16-year-old, and I was like, wait, this is terrible. With 95 pounds on the bar, I'm like, my body's gonna explode.
I was squatting two plates in high school. You know, speak for yourself, Mike.
All right, fine.
I'm kidding. Totally kidding.
But you know, like squatting, and then also if you don't know how, it's a very intimidating thing to do.
It hurts your neck really bad the first time.
Everything sucks about squatting.
You can't get your arms quite back. You don't have the shoulders flexibility yet to be able to grab the bar. The bar actually hurts your hands.
Everything sucks when you first start squatting. So now imagine if your fucking spine is making an L and you have some developmental disability. You're like this. I don't really. Do we got to do this? Can I just do it? And this kid's clearly putting in the work. And then everyone around him is being so supportive. And then also, by the way, from what I understand, his friends, his actual friends, were like, yo, this is not cool. And they pushed back against this I Am Mighty Fit. And then they got flamed again. And it's like, what are we? My point is, and I'm sorry, you know, I Am Mighty Fit, you might be a great guy. You might be a fucking dude giving tons of money to charity. And you're like a super supportive friend. I don't know. But what I will say is this. There's a million people out there that are perfectly cool to make fun of. But again, I'll put the finger right here. Have fun with it. There's a million people out there that it's nice to be. And I'm not one of these guys that's like, you can't punch down. I think you can. Yeah. But you can't punch down on developmentally disabled people and physically disabled people in a nice little bun. That's fucking insane. What are we doing? I hope that made you feel great, all those likes and shit. Thank you. All right. Now to move on to something really happy. You know who Greg Maddux is, Giorgio?
I believe he is a baseball player.
He was a baseball player, 80s and 90s. And he was, when I was a little boy, Fernando looked like he came from another planet, Fernando Valenzuela. Then, of course, Kershaw, my beloved Kershaw. And there was a time of Pedro Martinez, like late 90s, or like 2000 era, 99-2000 Pedro was unhittable. But there was only a few dudes that I saw. Like I said, Pedro, Fernando, Kershaw. Peak Kershaw was like, it was filthy. But Greg Maddux had so much command on the mound. I'd never seen, this guy was so dominant. And he wasn't a power pitcher either. He wasn't like a guy who was blowing people away. He just had so much command on the mound. But he looks like he should have been playing golf. He looks like he should be doing my taxes. He's a dorky white dude who wasn't particularly like tall or jacked. And he wore glasses. And he was like a silly kind of goofy looking white dude, you know? So I never knew that he was also behind the scenes a savage of like king prank. King on top of his game, dominant savage. And this is Andre Dawson, Cubs legend, telling a story about Greg Maddux on the road with all his other teammates. Please watch.
He addressed me one cold day, myself, Jerome Walton, Dwight Gooden, Sean Dustin. We were sitting in the jacuzzi and he asked me, he says, hey, Hulk, have you ever seen four black guys run from one white guy? And I looked at him amazed and I said, no, Mad Dog, not really. So he said, no. He said, seriously, have you ever seen four black guys run from one white guy? And I nodded and I said, no, again. And he walks over to the jacuzzi and he drops his shorts and he starts taking a leak in the jacuzzi. And man, we were scattering everywhere. So he looked at it and he said, run, brothers, run.
Ladies and gentlemen, my deserved champion of the week, Major League Baseball legend Greg Maddux.
Wow.
You ever seen four black guys run away from a white guy? What are you talking about, Craig?
No. And then pees in the jacuzzi.
And run, brother, run.
At the end.
Run, brothers. Run. And just whips his dick out and just starts.
Only in sports is that kind of camaraderie and the military accepted.
Yeah, or only in sports do you not go to jail.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Where, like, I got. Can you imagine if you were, like, at LA Fitness and you were in the
and
hot tub?
Only if you are an elite athlete can you get away with that without retaliation.
Right, like if that was a bench warmer, you're fucked. Would,
yeah.
You're exactly. fucked.
Yeah. You got to be the guy. You got to be him. And he probably was on a heater, too. He was probably just on the road crushing it.
Yeah. They were on a sick one.
Yeah, he was like, I can do anything.
I didn't, just like the bit, because if he just walked up and pissed in the jacuzzi, I'd be like, well, he's a bonehead. It's fun.
That's funny.
The fact that he clearly was in his hotel room, he's like, how do I see Dunstan and see Andre Dawson down there. Okay. All right. This is how I'm going to deliver it. He clearly, it was like a Jackass bit. Like he had a setup, a punchline.
That, or he just stumbled. This is him. And he just stumbles out and he's like,
yeah.
Hey, well, see, well, yeah.
Yes.
You ever seen him?
That's true. Have you ever seen Because I thought, by the way, when I first started watching that video, I was like, oh, no, is Greg Maddux, like, a racist?
Yeah, you kind of feel that.
You know, like, uh-oh, what is he going to say? Like, is this going to be... But the payoff was huge. Payoff was huge. All right, so I put up Greg Maddux, champion of the week. I put up on my Instagram some questions for you. I said, what should I talk about tomorrow on the show? Thinking I'd get, like, a couple topics to add to what I wanted to initially talk about. It turns out I got, like, 9,000. So I'm going to go through those because I don't want to do this show to talk about shit I want to talk about if it isn't at all interesting or relevant to you guys. Let's see here. Eddie's fitness journey. If protein and calories are good, does carb amount matter for pre-diabetics? Ooh, that's a really good question. Well, interesting you say that because I just saw this study where they gave actual... Now, these were actual diabetics, okay? The one that you're born with, not the one that you develop. Type two. Okay. I'm not a physician, but I did actually see a study, and I do have at least the know-how to dissect a lot of these studies and understand what they're going for, right? And it showed after a 6-month period, if they fed diabetics a high carb diet or a low carb diet, it didn't matter. The results were exactly the same as far as blood sugar and insulin control if they ended up losing weight. So weight loss overall is really the determining factor. Now, for pre-diabetics, I can't say that, and I highly encourage you to talk to a medical professional about this, someone who specializes in that. Because pre-diabetic, now everything that happens after that is kind of hinged on what you're eating. I would imagine that if you lost considerable weight, if you're overweight and you lost weight, I don't think your macros would matter much. But you probably will find a lot more immediate success if you didn't eat a high amount of carbohydrates, if you engaged in more of a ketogenic type diet. I have a friend of mine who is pre-diabetic, and he started including that kind of protocol into his life, and it's worked wonders. Not only has he lost a lot of weight, he's also found it much easier to just manage his blood sugar. And also, he gets a lot of the enjoyable things to eat. You know, he can put in the eggs and the bacon and the cheese without having to sacrifice necessarily enjoyment with food, right? Because you're giving up bread and candy. And you know, that does suck. It's not a huge, it's not, you know, being a refugee in Rwanda, but it sucks to have to kind of limit things that you find delicious. And my daughter's crazy. I'm happy about this crazy, but my daughter literally doesn't want bread products. She's like, nah, I'm good. I don't order burgers for her. If we go to In-N-Out, I get lettuce wrap, right? If we go to like an artisan burger place, I'll get her lettuce because she just doesn't want the bun. If we don't go to a place that offers that, before she even gets started in the burgers, just immediately the bun, fucking goodbye. Later. She doesn't, but outside of that, I don't know what, bread's the shit. Bread is, as far as like yumminess, bread products, bread, be it bread itself or croissants or donuts or, you know what I'm saying? Like baked bread products.
Over the last week, I've had 7 Cuban sandwiches.
And if you just took out the ham with the mustard and like and some Swiss or whatever, I believe it's like a Swiss provolone. It might be a Cuban style cheese. But if you typically Cuban sandwiches, the jamon and you got the cheese. And if you just took that out and it, you're like, okay, it's good. The Cuban sandwich? Oh, oh, orgasmic. Why? Nice little, you know, that crispy baguette.
And the way they press it, too. Mm. Certain crunch on the outside, that light fluffy on the inside.
Yeah. Cuban, this did bring, okay. I'm going to go on a tangent here. But I'm going to make a bold claim. Latina is the supreme female.
Disagree.
You're free to do that. Let me give you my, I'm biased. I mean, my wife's white, but I'm a Mexican man. But I also I am very my dick is like the UN. Many sisters, many Asian girls. I mean, many Asian girls because of where I grew up. Many my ex-wife was blonde, Orange County white girl. I don't discriminate. I like it all. I'm saying that that's the supreme though for this reason. I've met plenty of dudes. Not racist at all, but they're like, you know what? I'm not into black chicks. I'm not into them. I met plenty of dudes that are like, I'm not into Asian chicks. You know, it's like, I met plenty of dudes like myself. We're like, you know, like the Margot Robbie or like the Kate Upton blonde, classic kind of beautiful American woman, like blonde, blue eyes. Like, don't get me wrong. I'll hit it. But that's I'm not into it. It doesn't excite me as much as like I've never met a dude who's like, you know, just not into Latinas. It's not a thing. I've never met that guy. I'm sure you exist, but you're the same percentage of people who are like, I don't like bread.
Until you have a serious relationship with a Latina.
No, don't get me wrong. There's a downside. Giorgio brings up a very good point. You'll risk it all. Maybe that's why they are so hot, is because the downside's so high.
Every one of them you must treat like a princess. Their family becomes your family immediately.
Oh, no, no, not only
your money becomes her money immediately.
Their family, their family doesn't become not only your family. Their family also becomes people who you're on a fucking landmine with, because her third extended cousin will beat the shit out of you if you... Which is always the funniest thing to me because it's real. I had a situation I talked about.
Where do you think I learned to play dominoes?
Well, I had a situation. I talked about this on different outlets, but where a drug dealer ripped me off. And like my cousins I kind of barely know. Like we're genuinely invested. They were going to find him. They were going to beat the fuck out of him. And I was like, dude, that is such a, like these guys were like legit cholos and stuff. But at the same, I was like, guys, thank you. But what's, you know, drug dealers rip people off. That's what they were like, nah, your family. We're going to fuck this guy up. And the same, you're like, it's so funny because also, and you know, I'm telling the truth. So don't get all butthurt out there, La Raza. Those same dudes and gals who are super down and like super protective of their family, treat their family like shit. Like, they all talk shit like crazy to each other, right?
Oh, the back-talking in the kitchen?
Yeah.
Oh, the way a brother will talk to a sister?
Yeah. Or, like,
it's like, whoa, you don't talk to a woman like that. But if you don't hold the door for her, he's like, hey, Holmes,
yeah,
let's talk real quick. Yeah. How you treated my sister? I saw you not holding that door.
Or, like, you see, like, that like, line you cross where, like, guys can be shitty to their moms. Like, oh, just treat them like fucking ass. And then you do, like, one yo mama joke. And you know, they drag you outside and beat you up like you're in Goodfellas. And I was like, wait, what? But what? where's the uniform nature? But either way, all right. So I'm saying this is, and I'm sticking to this. At me, hit me up in the comment section. I'm saying as far as like overall universal approval, Latina is queen of Poontang. Because I've met plenty. I love all. Any ethnic lady I'm a fan of. I love black chicks. I love Asian chicks. I love Latinas. Any ethnicity draws me in. But I've met plenty of dudes. I've met plenty of guys who are like, Asian chicks, man. I don't know. And this doesn't do it for me. I met plenty of dudes that are like, white girls, dude, white girls. Even white guys. I met white guys that are like, I don't, white girls, it's not.
That's because they haven't had top shelf white women.
Maybe.
Every ethnicity of man will at least come around once to a top shelf white woman.
Well, every ethnicity of man will come around at least once to any woman if she's hot enough.
That's what I'm saying.
You know what I'm like?
But the holy grail.
Any dude. I don't care how racist you are. You could be in the Klan. And I sat at a dinner table with Megan Good one time, and I was like, if we dropped you in the middle of a Klan meeting, they'd be like, all right, we need to rethink this. We need to rethink this whole thing.
Maybe there are some good ones.
Yeah, exactly. Like any guys, boner will win. Boner will win always. Now, that's all. That's my whole take. Okay, let me bring up Megan Good again. Okay, so I was at a dinner. It was the Spike Men's Awards or something like that. Like, this is years ago. But for some reason, they did the tables, the seating by first name. I know. So I was at this like 30-person table, and at my table was Marissa Miller, Megan Good, Miley Cyrus, and some other. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I was newly single with my manager, who's like happily married, but he was like so trying to live vicariously through my dick.
I bet you were pulling too.
I was a successful single man.
Yeah.
I was to the point that it got. I can't talk openly about this without sounding like a complete douchebag. Like, you wouldn't believe how much pussy I got.
No, but like I did fine for myself.
Yeah.
And I've dabbled in the top shelf of what there is to dabble in. But like, you see another guy, and like, with your resources and your looks and then the way you used to like to party.
Yes.
I was like, it all equates together to being able to wrangle.
But Partying Mike didn't do that well. Because Partying Mike, you got to remember, I got clean when I was like 20, almost 22.
Okay.
So, but single, after my first marriage in between Bianca, I was also like right when I started getting on TV a lot. And
disposable income.
Yeah. And I don't have a big nut. I'm not like a guy, I don't like Bentleys and Maseratis. So I lived in a small place, but right on the beach in Venice.
Yes.
And
so it's cozy. It's nice. It's probably cute right by the water. It doesn't need to be a big mansion.
Well, you know what more of it was I love that. And I love Poontang more. I'm the horniest guy ever. So I was happy. But what did happen was that when it got to be so transactional, it did make me feel like it was harming me. My publicist called me. She's like, we need to talk. And I was like, uh-oh. What did I do wrong? And she said, I can't spend all day dealing with other publicists who want their clients so that they can hook up with. Like, she was so overwhelmed. Now, don't get me wrong. It wasn't Margot Robbie. It wasn't Julia Roberts.
No, but it's girls trying to break
reality in. Star. Yeah, yeah. A lot of like reality stars, especially right after Dancing with the Stars, when they were asking me to be The Bachelor. And then I would go to these like ABC shows, and it would be like girls from The Bachelor or like the bachelorettes themselves.
Yeah.
She said, it fucking ruins my day. I have to take 10 calls a day from different publicists.
Now imagine if you OnlyFans was around then, how rich you would be.
No, dude, because that has no bearing on if I was on OnlyFans, I would be balling from dudes.
True.
It'd be mostly dudes.
Yeah. Who's salivating over your abs?
Because even if chicks are into a guy, they're not going to go to, they don't care about like looking at him. Like there's a small segment, but like girls fantasize about being with Jason Momoa. They don't really like watching him jerk off would be like, okay, but I'm not going to pay money.
No. It's just like you and a camera and you're sitting at a kitchen table asking about her day. Just like it's you walking in from work, setting the bag down, taking the jacket off.
which is so funny because like I don't do that to my wife. Like my wife would be the only member of that OnlyFans. She'd be like, oh, this is everything I've ever dreamed Mike would do, you know, instead of like watching an MMA video. And she's like, what'd you say? Huh? What?
the husband experience.
All right. So that, I don't know how the diabetes got us into that, but Supreme Poon.
Yeah.
All right. This guy's got numbers in his thing. So I'm not even, eating enough protein while trying to lose weight. I'm 290 pounds beef. Should I really be eating 290 grams of protein? No, no, no. You don't look, 1 gram of per pound of body weight is a nice marker for people who are relatively in shape. People who are overweight, even slightly, if you're 30 pounds or more overweight, which is nothing to be ashamed of. That's like kind of life. You should be eating the amount of protein to fit your lean body mass, which is your body mass or your overall weight minus body fat. So if you're 290, I have to assume you're not half Thor. You're overweight, right? Not talking shit. I'm just being, let's get down to brass tacks. You're probably a big guy, but you're not 290 pounds big, right? So take away, you don't have to get too solid with it, but let's say for easy math, you're 40% body fat. You have a 40% body fat. So 40% of 290 is fill in the blank. It's got to be somewhere around like 130. Giorgio's doing
116.
116. Okay. So minus 116 from 290, and then from there you get what you have, and that try to start as a good rule of thumb with that amount of protein, 1 gram per amount of lean body mass. Okay, that is a much better marker because you're right. And by the way, 290 is not extraordinary. There's been times where I at 170 was eating 275 grams of protein. Everything is very relative, and that's why I've always said like dieting is the most important, but it's also the most unique and personalized. Because if you're super lean and super muscular, your need for protein is going to be way higher than the person who just needs like 1 gram per pound of body weight. Giorgio and I are perfect. Like Giorgio and I would need 1 gram per pound of body weight. Fine. We're in shape dudes, but we're not hulks. We're not. But when I was gacked on performance enhancing drugs, 6% body fat and bigger, more muscular than I was now, my need for amino acid and protein synthesis was super high. I think like a guy like, what's The Rock, like 230 nowadays, something like that, somewhere in that ballpark.
He's got to be more than that.
Is he more than that? Okay. Let me think of a good, cause that guy, I was thinking of that dude in Reacher. He's fucking way big. Chris Hemsworth, when he's getting ready for a role, right? He's in really good shape. He's really lean. He's probably about 225, somewhere in that ballpark. Believe me, he's not eating 225 grams of protein. He's eating 280, 290, 300 grams of protein. Big fucking lean dudes. Justin Harris has talked about in the past, you know, he was lean like 260, and there's, you know, 400 grams of protein some at points. And some of those old DC guys like Dante Trudell's clients, there, your 400 grams of protein was not unheard of. But it is relative. Someone with your metabolic rate, someone with your training history, someone with your level of body fat, don't go shooting for a gram of per pound of body weight. Go always start with lean body mass. Speedo McAwesome, our friend. You know Speedo McAwesome, Giorgio. He's a good man. Are gas station boner pills really worth it? Or should one just get some Blue Chew or other brands? I know Kevin. Kevin's a jokester. His name's Speedo McAwesome. Okay. So there's probably some level of comedy with that. But this is a real thing that I want to address with people. If you're not 70 plus, you should not be taking anything for erections. And if you are, there's dysfunction. Now, this dysfunction might not be physical or biological. You may not have a tumor or something that's making, but your lifestyle, your drug use, your drinking, something's up. Because if you're a healthy, functioning male, you better be fucking in a wheelchair at 90, like, The fact that it's so common that guys need to take something to get a boner, there's something wrong in your life. Okay, if that's a, don't say like, well, if these blue, if these gas station pills don't work, I'm gonna turn to fill in the blank drug. No, it's like, no. Getting a boner should be on par with having your menstrual cycle for women. It just should happen. If there's drugs to suppress boner, I need to take those. I'm 45 years old. I'm probably in pocket with a lot of guys that are taking prescriptions to get boners. Granted, I find my wife very attractive and I have a very healthy sex life, but I just don't understand what's going on. Maybe you're healthy and just your relationship is so, it's so dysfunctional that it leads you to, I get that. I'm not shitting on you. I'm saying that you can't just pass this off as like, well, this is what you do now. You take a pill. No. Boners, it should be a little bit better than like seventh grade. But I'm being genuinely dead serious here. And this is clean off all HRT, any type of performance enhancing drugs. I was at Ellis Mania. This is 2018 or something like that, here in Austin. And I was cleaning up, helping Jason and the crew clean up afterwards. And Jason Ellis's female friends that were there, like supporters of the show, like Lee Raven. And like there was just a couple other girls there. And she just put her hand on my back, like innocently. And she was like, thanks for helping out. Like, and I was like, fuck. I had to go because I had fought in Ellis Mania. So I had like flowy shorts on. And I'm like, fuck, I better handle it. I'm going to be embarrassed because I have a big raging heart on. George Clooney said something very interesting. He said, it's so funny being an actor because we're the only humans that try to cry. Everyone else, you try hard not to cry. You do anything you possibly can not to cry, right? Especially dudes. We do anything we possibly can to resist, to suppress that desire to cry. That's how boners should be. You should not be trying to get one. All right? And I mean, it could be a serious, by the way, it could be really serious. It could be genuinely serious. You could have some biological, and I'm not speaking out of my ass here, from years of sitting next to Dr. Drew on Loveline. It could be, if you are having trouble, if you're a normal, healthy guy and you can't get erections, and you don't use drugs or do something that you know is leading to that, it could be serious. So please, that's my PSA for you guys. Wilt C. Jacked Jake Gyllenhaal in New Roadhouse. Dude's a beast. Totally agree he's a beast. He's not jacked. He's like 170 something pounds.
No, I saw him live. He thickened up. He's a solid 195 at like 5%.
Oh, he was shredded. Don't get me wrong.
No, but I mean,
looks amazing.
He's freaking what, 5'10"?
No. Jake Gyllenhaal is like 6'2".
Then he was probably.
I met the man.
He's probably 215 then.
I met the man a couple times, and the first time I met him, I was filling in for Regis, hosting live with Kelly, and he was one of the guests. And I was like, oh shit, like you're way bigger than I thought you were.
He 215 then.
He, but from what I read, and this is his trainer. Did an article in Muscle that he started at like 220.
To film,
he got down to like 175.
No way.
That's what I'm not making that up. I could even find it. Guys, Jason Walsh is the name of his trainer. Let's see here.
Because he did that fake stunt with Connor, and I was there for that. And we were like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah.
And then I'm looking at him. His chest is surprisingly big. There's no way
Jake Gyllenhaal has always been in great shape. I mean, if you saw Southpaw, Jake Gyllenhaal gets in good shape and remains lean and like is active.
If he was 170 or 175, he would be blacking out as he was standing up. He'd be so dehydrated.
Working together, Walsh and Gyllenhaal trained hard to hit those lofty peaks and shred down to 5% body fat. I buy it. I don't know about five, but he was sub 10. He was single digit.
Eight to seven.
He was single digit. Yeah, he was shredded. And I'm not talking shit. Jake Gyllenhaal looked amazing. From 205 pounds at the start to about 184 pounds.
84, I believe.
Right.
And even that, so it's sprinkling a little bit of a lie. So we're thinking like maybe he hit 188 one day at his most sucked out.
Well, he also, the trainer mentions in here, he's like, you guys only saw the peaks. That's Hollywood magic, okay? You got to remember, like, Gerard Butler has talked about it for 300. There's lighting. And Mark Twight and the guys at Jim Jones, the old Jim Jones, they did the training for 300 movies. They were committed. There was no trickery. There was no CGI. Those guys were shredded, okay? But when they're filming, they're off camera, literally eating, like, simple sugars, doing band work, pumping up. The lighting has to be perfect. So you're seeing you can't live like that. 6-7% body. That's not life. You can't.
No, and if you're that dehydrated, you stand up and you see white. Like, you can't walk around if you're that dehydrated. You're cutting that hard to have that kind of.
Talk to pro bodybuilders, and when they're on stage, when they look at their peak, they feel horrible. That's not.
You twitch one wrong way, you cramp so bad, you feel like you're going to tear everything. You're going to die,
yeah. And that should come from, like, heavy, exhaustive work, not, you know, flexing.
Your toe turns the wrong way? Oh, my God.
But dude's a beast, for sure. Jake Gyllenhaal, absolutely committed. And he's another one of those examples of, like, Mark Wahlberg in a lot of movies. Jake Gyllenhaal's a perfect example. Brad Pitt and Troy, where people are like, oh, my God, he was so jacked. I was like, no. They're just so well-proportioned and lean that they look amazing.
It's composition.
It's all, look, bodybuilding in general or physique sports, it's a sleight of hand. It's all like what you can, and that's why the best of the best have really small insertion points and really like small wrists and ankles, and because in proportion it looks, you know, you don't see a lot of the guys who are like cankle dudes. But there, you know, that's not to take away from, obviously there was a lot of work that goes into it.
So you're saying Eddie Hall wouldn't be a good.
No, but even like Eddie Hall, obviously, like, strength a lot of times is not beautiful. No. Okay, like extreme strength. Because what is extreme strength? It's a lot of the muscles around your spine and around your hips being very well built. And that doesn't necessarily make for like a curvaceous, beautiful, appealing physique. That's why a lot of times when I see some people who have both, like Steffi Cohen, you're like, wow, that's a. Because she's so well put together, but also she's so extraordinarily strong. What's more important, tracking calories or grams of protein to lose body fat? From Halen Heavens. Well, that's like asking what's more important to be good at baseball, hitting or fielding. You can't really pick one. You got to kind of, when it comes to, because a higher amount and sticking to a consistent amount of protein is going to lead you to probably be able to regulate your calories better. And also, high amounts of protein give you added benefits outside of just too much or too little calories. There's going to be better protein synthesis, better metabolic function, higher thermic effect of food. So you got to say both. You can't, when it comes to weight loss, you can't ignore calories though. Like if you were going to say one or the other, it's always calories when it comes to weight loss. You said for body weight. Body weight? In a vacuum, if we're talking about stepping on the scale, calories is all that matters. Literally all that matters. That's why I say, if you watch Survivor, those people lose a shit ton of weight. If that's all you care about is getting some abstract number on a scale, just don't eat very much. It works. Don't eat very much for a long period of time. Now, if you want to lose weight and look better, protein has to come into consideration. If you and Dr. Drew bring back Loveline, maybe you already announced that? Question mark from Sarah Boobaria. Boobaria. I want to go to the Boobaria. Sounds like a great store. Well, we're trying. Dr. Drew and I have made a concerted effort to try. It's not easy. The people who own the archives of shows from the past, all the way back to pre-Adam, is one person. The people who own the TV rights to Loveline is another person. It's a now defunct production company called Marcy Werner. So then Viacom absorbed that. So Viacom has a piece of it because Viacom was also the owner of Infinity Broadcasting for many years. Then there's also Westwood One, which is now Podcast One, which was the syndicator of Loveline, who they have a piece. But the people who own the name Loveline is this newer company that that absorbed K-Rock. And they're not that pumped on it. And they're really petty about it. Because they're not pumped about it because, not because Dr. Drew and I couldn't do a good job or that it wouldn't be big or that they couldn't even make money off of it or that they have a pre-existing show that's using the name. No, none of that's true. I don't want to get into too much details because it's not really the forum to do that. It would be inappropriate. But they're not pumped on doing business with Drew and I. I'll leave it at that. They're not excited about it. Reverse diet. Reverse diet. Very misunderstood, very important idea that we should discuss. What is a diet, right? A lot of times we know a diet is to titrate your calories downwards to be in a caloric deficit, therefore you lose weight. A reverse diet is the opposite. My best advice for reverse dieting, and there is a lot of upside to reverse dieting. You're going to get better hormone function. You're going to gain a better metabolism. You're going to be able to eat more and maintain your weight. You're going to feel better. You're going to sleep better. You're going to perform better in any type of athletic endeavor. Here's where people screw up reverse diets so much. It's the exact same problem with dieting. You want too much too quickly. And you pull the trigger too quickly. What do I mean by that? Well, people start reverse dieting when they're like 20%. Guys would be like, they'll diet down to 20% body fat. And they're like, time for the reverse diet. It's like, whoa, whoa. No, you got to get into a really healthy, almost maybe too lean setting to then reap the benefits of then trying to reset your metabolism and grow a more robust metabolism, eat more food, and also get that hormonal benefit. Because if you are too unlean, I don't want to say the word fat because that's not cool. But if you're too unlean and then you start reverse dieting, adding in more calories, you're just going to be in the same fucked hormonal setting that you were in the first place. So you got to get, for guys, I would say probably near 10%, for women in the 15 to 16% ballpark. So that's one thing. You got to earn that ability to add more food in and then still not add body fat.
Don't you have to maintain that for a little bit of time too?
Yes. And it's not something that's going to, there is a rebound. If you get really lean, and we're talking like Jake Gyllenhaal now after filming Roadhouse, there's a rebound effect where you can actually add in a pretty considerable amount of calories and it would just go to muscle glycogen. But it's very small. It's a very small window and people fuck it up. A lot of bodybuilders, a lot of fighters do that where they're like, oh, fight's over. Order pizzas and wash them down with chocolate sundaes and it can make you sick and you get fat quick. But there is a rebound effect. But the big thing that comes with reverse dieting that is very important that people, you all should initiate with regular dieting, is that it's minimum effective dosage. You don't want to add too many calories when you don't have to, and you don't want to take away too many calories when you don't have to. Always start with too little of a deficit and then, manipulate it from there. Always, if you're reverse dieting, or if you're trying to gain weight, always start with too little a surplus, undershoot it, and you can manipulate from there. You never want to go overboard. It's always minimum effective dosage, whatever direction you're going in. Let's see here. You want me to, Mark Mano wants me to talk about my awesome hot wife. Well, yeah, it's awesome. She's hot. Great dumper. I love her. That's about it. I don't know what else you want me to talk about. It's pretty fun being married to my wife. Consistency, 80% right works. 80% right consistently works. 100% for a week does not. Totally true. From Jake Denham. Consistency is kind of key with training and with nutrition when it comes to making like a real change. People get so obsessive about making like an overwhelming change and being so super strict and so super committed. And that lasts for 8 days. And then they go off the rails. Doing really good, pretty good for 6 months is way better than being perfect for 6 days. With training and with nutrition, and even in athletic training. Everyone goes out like beginning preseason, like I'm going to do Kobe Bryant's preseason. Then 2 weeks in, you're fucking dusted. When if you just showed up every day really worked on fundamentals, you'd be a lot better off. That goes with grappling. That goes with everything I've had my experience with. Golfer's elbow from lifting and pull-ups. Have you dealt with this? Yes. I don't know if it's necessarily golfer's elbow, but I got fucked up elbows, both sides at different times. And it does come from a lot of it was Muay Thai too, I think I got. Compression and circulation enhancing techniques. There's specific kind of sleeves and bands that you use to increase circulation to that area. And then also cold compress. And then try your best to train around that. I would not say that like completely resting is always a good idea. It usually isn't, unless you have like, you know, spinal fractures. I think taking complete time off and getting away from movement is always a bad idea. But you might have to switch to lat pull downs instead of pull ups. You might have to switch to, you know, cable rows instead of dumbbell rows if it's just like pain to be at different angles. Right now I'm dealing with it with my shoulder. I love overhead press. I love big dumbbell presses and stuff. My shoulder work consists of like a lot of bands and cables right now because I fucked my shoulder up. You know, I don't think you should. Movement is medicine. Keeping that area through ranges of motion is going to help, but you got to be wise about it. If it's extraordinarily painful, you shouldn't be doing it. You know?
I found the hammer back machine. I know a lot of gyms don't have that. But yeah. Like if my shoulders are pretty torn up, it keeps my chest in a good position.
Yeah,
it really
works keep the it locked.
Lat. Yep.
That's a very good point. Yeah. Any like hammer equipment is like looked at as better than most machines for a reason. Like the hammer equipment is pretty awesome. Eating disorders and how to overcome them. From Payaso Productions. I wanna work at Payaso Productions. It's a very serious question. And I've dealt with eating disorders. I've created eating disorders from my disordered eating, you know. First off, there's levels to this shit, right? Like me getting overly neurotic about my eating and then, you know, binging because I get too strict and life gets out of control is one level. That's not even in the same ballpark, in my opinion, as bulimia, serious anorexia. That's a life crippling disease. But even with all eating disorders, my opinion is, and please understand, I'm not a mental health professional or a physician, but with eating disorders, I do think it's similar to recovery from drug addiction and alcoholism, in that you have to do, everything has to be from the inside out. Once you start externalizing, well, it's this food that makes me eat this, or it's this person that... reality is something's disordered internally. And you just got to be fearless about getting to the center of that and dealing with that. And then, and oftentimes, it's not easy. And I feel very serious levels of sympathy because, at least for me, like, I don't need drugs and alcohol to get by. In fact, I do probably better without them. You need food. Sex addicts and food and any type of eating disorder, I always say, God, that's got to be so fucking hard. Because you can't just say like, well, no, none of that for the rest of my life. Let me figure out how to do that. No, you have to eat every day. You have to find healthy sexual partners and stuff. Like that has to, it's a crucial part of being a happy human being and being alive when it comes to eating, right? So I would say don't be in a hurry. It's not going to be a quick thing. And then also deal with it from the inside out. And then talk to professionals if you can, especially nowadays where you don't have to have extra money to get in touch with a mental health professional. Even just one of the phone calls to those services, or if there's a county facility where there's, you know, psychiatric students, it can mean a lot to talk to someone who has some insight into why we do the things that we do. Let's see here. Should we be feeling sore after every workout? Absolutely not. Soreness is a terrible indicator of the quality of your workout. It comes with working out well. There are quality workouts that will make you sore as shit. But soreness is not, by any stretch of the imagination, something that you should use to dictate whether or not you had a good workout. Mechanical tension drives hypertrophy and muscle growth. Mechanical tension, high amounts of mechanical tension to the muscle doesn't often create soreness. Working muscles at their most extreme stretch position oftentimes creates incredible soreness. For instance, if you were to do an exercise, bless you, if you were to do an exercise like hip thrusts, very heavy, very hard, unless you're very new to working out, you're not going to feel much soreness in your butt. But believe me, there's a lot of tension and mechanical tension created in the glutes. If you do walking lunges, you'll be sore as fuck, even if you didn't create a lot of mechanical tension. Why? Because they're working that muscle at its most extreme stretch range. Straight leg deadlifts, Romanian deadlifts, dumbbell flies in comparison to like a chest press. Dumbbell flies make you fucking super sore if you do them for like high amounts of volume. It's not saying it's bad, but it's not good just by inherently making you sore. Okay, so push to measure your training in the moment by how much fatigue you're developing and then how close to failure you're getting. And if you wake up in the morning and you're sore or not, that shouldn't be a way that you dictate whether or not you are doing a good workout. And then on top of that, being sore all the time is not a good thing. Being sore all the time means that you are probably going to hit a wall. Now, don't get me wrong. When you first start training, and if you're consistent, I don't get sore very often. I get a little bit. My traps get a little sore to the touch after I do deadlifts. My chest might be a little sore if I really go after it, but I just don't get that sore because also there's an adaptation that comes with your muscles getting used to being put through stress. When you're just getting off the couch, if there's been a long layoff, if you've never exercised, you've never done resistance training, there is going to be soreness. That's not something you could avoid. Okay. So just like I said, don't at all apply any credence to whether or not it was good if you're sore or not. Final question. Conditioning for BJJ competition. Great question. Something I do know about, but I also think like there's a lot more I need to know. First off, how soon is it? How long have you been training? How high is your skill level? Okay. A black belt who's been a black belt for 10 years has to do much less high intensity skill training than someone who's like doing their first competition. You know what I mean? Like Rafael Lovato Jr., if he's going to get ready, doesn't have to do a lot of hard work on the mats because his skill level's so high. He has to work on refine his skills, but you know, Gervonta Davis doesn't need to do hard rounds leading up to a fight because his boxing skill is very high. He needs to almost exclusively worry about making sure that his body's ready to go 15 rounds, 12 rounds. Rafael Lovato Jr. needs to make sure that his body is prepared. The conditioning is high enough. The injury proofing is there to go maybe 5-6 matches, right? If he's in a tournament. If you're a white belt and you're doing your first competition, you almost exclusively should be focusing on jiu-jitsu. Okay. You spend too much time tiring yourself out doing rowing circuits and kettlebell work, you're going to get flattened either way. I don't care how good a shape you're in. Bobby Maximus has talked about this openly. He did a great article about it. How he was so physically fit going in. He was doing just like setting world records on the C2 rower, on the bike, Airdyne bike, lifting heavy. He was his resting heart rate was down here, and his aerobic capacity was high. His anaerobic ability, his threshold was fucking through the roof. He's like, I'm so physically fit. He got armbarred in like 30 seconds. He's like, I should have spent more time fucking fighting. Now, that being said, Chael Sonnen has made the point, and this is very true. When you're talking about high-level fighting, any combat sport, after the first couple minutes, it becomes a tough guy game. It's not who's a better boxer, who's a better grappler, who's a better wrestler. After a certain amount of time, it becomes a tough, who's in better condition. So if you can open up your gas tank, obviously that's a huge, huge deal. But if you're purple belt or under, just try to get on the mats as much as you possibly can. As much as you possibly can. And that will take care of a lot of your conditioning. try to roll with as many people that are way better than you as possible, and try to roll with people who are a little bit not, maybe a little bit underneath you, so that you feel confident to try things, to get courageous, right? But then go roll with people who are going to put you in a lot of bad situations, and just see how you could survive, and do a lot of that as much as you possibly can leading up to it. And then outside of that, you got to look at your energy systems, okay? This is an overall piece of advice when it comes to prepping for combat sports competition. You can't leave any of the three energy systems unattended to. A lot of old boxers used to make the mistake of they were so aerobically in tune. They do road work on skip rope. And so their aerobic base was super high, which is great. So they're going to recover between rounds and be able to keep going. But if they push a dude up against the ropes and they were going for a knockout and they didn't get it, they were done, right? Because they didn't work that anaerobic system. They get into the threshold high enough. And then a lot of grapplers make the mistake if they get so strong, their ATP system, they do fucking heavy deadlifts, rah, 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 and they come in, but then they have no recovery ability. Halfway through the first, if they don't win that first match within the first couple minutes, you're done. It's over. So anaerobic, aerobic, and ATP, you know, their top-end ATP system, they all have to be considered. And that comes from your aerobic is that long-distance, kind of very low intensity stuff. Your road work, you know, I don't like road work just because I don't have good running mechanics. But, you know, any C2 bike or like a rower, you do it, you can still be nasal breathing, do it for a long period of time. You get your body more efficient at fat burning, and you get that aerobic base up. Then you start talking about the anaerobic. That's where you're getting those like horrible, horrible intervals. 30-30, Tabatas 20-10, you know, 1 minute on, 2 minute off, where you're just going peaking max threshold, just real. And those are the ones that suck. Those are the ones we all hate. Running hills, sprinting. And then ATP type stuff is like, that's a jump, explosive jumping, explosive power movements, heavy lifting, so that you can get that in that moment where your fast twitch is just going to really fire hard. So you build up your strength, you build up your power to throw heavy round. If you take a guy's back, you're going to muscle that fucking arm in and you're going to get the choke, right? Because you've been working heavy lifts and you've been fortifying your body. That's your ATP system. You can't use that for more than like eight seconds. That's what you're doing. Anaerobic, you're talking about 30 seconds to a minute. And then aerobic is like all the rest. And the aerobic, the main benefit of the aerobic overall is that that's what's going to lead to your recovery. So whatever you do, your recovery is going to be shorter from doing that if you have a very good aerobic base. So there you go. And thank you to Giorgio. Huge Greek dick. His penis has been often referred to as Odysseus.
If you are a gay fan of Mike's and would like to see my OnlyFans, it is just.Giorgio. Please give me money.
He dresses up like a Greek warrior or something, like a Greek god. He's been like, you've been all the different, like Zeus.
I have actual prop costumes from the movie 300 that I wear for you guys.
Yeah. That's appealing. And thank you to Bet Online. Thank you to South of the Border. Thank you to First Detachment. And thank you to my patrons. Also, check out the bonus pod and all that I have available to you at the Patreon, training programs, nutritional information, the bonus pod where I break down things that I talk about on the show and then I get into more geeky detail. And it's all there for you. I could also be your trainer when it comes to nutrition and training right there with the top tier. In this crazy mixed up world that makes you think that nobody cares, I do. Be good, people.